Moscow and Leningrad thrown in. Also, though here I can only speak for myself, traveling there at the height of the Cold War was always an adventure, like sneaking behind enemy lines, particularly if one was engaged in covert research. Following Moscow's abrupt exit, Western embassies began to open up in brand new capital cities, Soviet names were expunged from the map and history books hastily rewritten, while foreign companies stepped in eagerly to fill the commercial and economic vacuum. For it was no secret that in Central Asia lay some of the last great prizes of the 20th century. These included fabulous oil and gas reserves, together with rich hoards of gold, silver, copper, zinc, lead and iron ore, not to mention crucial oil pipeline routes. So fierce was the competition that political analysts and headline writers in the West quickly began to speak of a new great game, as rival foreign powers and multinational companies fought for influence there. Some, too, had strategic and political agendas. But the sudden lurch from communism to free-for-all capitalism has not been achieved without a heavy toll. Small but vicious conflicts in Georgia, Azerbaijan, Armenia, Tajikistan and Uzbekistan, not to mention in neighboring parts of southern Russia, such as Chechnya and North Ossetia, have since convulsed this highly volatile region as rival factions jockeyed for power. As I write this, things have gone momentarily quiet there, but not so elsewhere on the old great game battlefield. In Afghanistan, so long at the epicenter of the century-long Anglo-Russian confrontation, bloodshed seems almost endemic. In 1979, the Russians moved in 100,000 troops to support their puppet government. But after a barbaric 10-year conflict, they were humiliatingly forced to withdraw. They left behind them their former puppet president, General Mohammad Najibullah, who 4 years later fell into the hands of the triumphant Taliban when Kabul surrendered to them. Dragged from the UN compound where he had been given sanctuary, he was brutally beaten, castrated, then strung up publicly. Gruesome photographs of him hanging there were splashed on the front pages of the world's newspapers. It was also reported that he had been translating the Great Game into Pashto, telling friends that every Afghan should be made to read it so that the terrible mistakes of the past would never be repeated. Next to follow the Russians into Afghanistan in 2001 were US, British, Canadian, Dutch and other NATO troops. They sprang from fears that further 9/11-type attacks on Western targets might be planned from secret al-Qaeda bases there. As well as destroying these, the NATO-led force was tasked with maintaining an uneasy peace, preparing the way for elections, eliminating the drug barons, and helping with reconstruction. The UK is currently planning to dispatch more troops there to help with this nightmarish, if not impossible, task, which has so far cost the lives of 22 British servicemen, an average of one every 8 days. At the time of writing, the outcome of the present brutal struggle in Afghanistan is impossible to foresee. The two most powerful players in the new great game, the USA and Russia, are both anxious to keep Central Asia in a peaceful and cooperative state in order to preserve their access to its rich gas and oil supplies. Indeed, Russia's new power on the world stage is heavily dependent on its control of the pipelines. The thought of any new Central Asian states following the example of Iran with its heady and alarming mix of oil, fundamentalism, and possible nuclear weapons is viewed as hair-raising in Washington and Moscow, though happily at present this seems a remote possibility. Besides the Americans and Russians, other regional powers, notably China, India, and Pakistan, are looking on with intense self-interest and concern. For the collapse of Russian rule in Central Asia has tossed the area back into the melting pot of history. Almost anything could happen there now, and only a brave or foolish man would predict its future. For this reason, I have not attempted to update my original narrative beyond adding this brief foreword. Among all the uncertainties, however, one thing seems certain. For good or ill, Central Asia is back in the thick of the news once more, and likely to remain there for a long time to come. Peter Hopkirk. Prologue. On a June morning in 1842, in the Central Asian town of Bukhara, two ragged figures could be seen kneeling in the dust in the great square before the emir's palace. Their arms were tied tightly behind their backs, and they were in a pitiful condition. Filthy and half-starved, their bodies were covered with sores, their hair, beards, and clothes alive with lice. Not far away were two freshly dug graves. Looking on in silence was a small crowd of Bukharans,